It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Cases of Ebola found in Democratic Republic of Congo. A British healthcare worker with Ebola returns home. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The Democratic Republic of Congo Sunday reported an outbreak of Ebola in its northern Equator province after 2 of 8 cases tested came back positive.
Cette épidémie.
Health Minister Félix Kabanki-Numbi said Sunday the outbreak in DRC doesn't have any link to what is happening in West Africa and is the 7th Ebola outbreak since the virus was first detected in Congo in 1976. The World Health Organization says more than 1,420 people have died in West Africa from Ebola, and there are now more than 2,600 confirmed cases in 4 countries. Meanwhile, a British citizen who contracted the virus in Sierra Leone has been evacuated to Britain. He was to be treated in an isolation unit at the Royal Free Hospital in London. James Watson is with the British Health Department.
The patient has been assessed over the last 24 hours by clinicians both in this country and in Sierra Leone. And the decision made that it would be in the best interest of the patient's health, for the patient to be brought back to the country, and indeed the Foreign Secretary has authorised that repatriation go ahead. What I would like to emphasise is that the risk of Ebola virus infection to the population of this country remains very low and is not changed by this decision.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization Sunday said one of its own healthcare workers working in Sierra Leone has tested positive for the Ebola virus. This is VOA News. The Nigerian Medical Association Sunday said it has suspended a public sector doctor's strike to help efforts to contain the virus. It's directing that physicians report to work today while negotiations with the government continue. In Liberia, where a state of emergency exists and entire communities have been quarantined to contain Ebola, people on the outside have tried to deliver food to those trapped inside. Defense chiefs from 10 East African countries have pledged thousands of troops to a new regional standby force for deployment as early as this year. Nick Long reports creation of the force has been moved up by about a year from December 2015.
Rwanda's military spokesman General Joseph Nzabamwita tells VOA why the goal was moved forward.
The East African Standby Force heads of state decided that due to the insecurity that is prevailing in the Eastern Africa region, the member countries need to take urgent steps.
In the past year, war has broken out in South Sudan and conflict has spread to Kenya's coastal region, while in the past month, security has deteriorated in Somalia. And Nzabamwita says the heads of state send army and police chiefs and defence ministers to a troop pledging meeting in Kigali this week, where the target number of troops and police has been agreed to.
The force pledging as regards the main forces were all realised as regards to a force of 5,000 men. We also pledged 4 formed up police units of between 140 and 170.
The East African plan, says Nzabamwita, is for each member state to contribute to a fund which should enable the regional force to put boots on the ground in a crisis zone within 14 days if necessary. Nick Long for VOA News, Kigali.
Libya is engulfed in new political turmoil with an Islamist militia openly challenging the legitimacy of the country's newly elected parliament. Its fighters took control of Tripoli's battered international airport. After seizing the facility in the Libyan capital, the militia from the coastal city Misrata called Sunday for the old General National Congress to be reinstated. It alleges the parliament elected in June was complicit in mysterious airstrikes on its positions at the airport as its militia fought rival fighters from the mountainous region of Sintan for 6 weeks for control of the airport. The Misratis directly blamed the airstrikes in the past week on Egypt and the United Arab Emirates. Cairo has denied its involvement. The French press agency reports that Mozambique's government and the former rebel group known as RENAMO have signed a ceasefire ending 2 years of armed conflict. The declaration was signed late Sunday in the capital Maputo. Part of the agreement allows the integration of RENAMO's remaining fighters into the state's security forces. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 25th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Two Ebola deaths have been confirmed in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
There is no link with the West African Ebola. But it is a hemorrhagic fever Ebola. So it is a case that came out of a small village inside the Equator province called Jera.
Lambert Mende is Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. Liberia's president orders a probe into last week's Ebola-related protest and shooting in West Point. Nigerian doctors suspend nationwide strike in the wake of Ebola outbreak. And Libya's parliament declares two Islamist militias terrorist groups.
Both militias have been involved in heavy fighting and clashes with forces loyal to former Army Chief of Staff General Khalifa Haftar.
That's VOA correspondent Edward Urania in Cairo, Egypt. A former South Sudan rebel chief denies he is mobilizing the youth in his area to join the government army. And Uganda's oil sector faces transparency criticism. Those stories plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo's health minister says two Ebola deaths have been confirmed in his country. Felix Kabange Numbi said Sunday that samples from two of eight people in the country tested positive for the virus. The DRC has had numerous encounters with Ebola since it was first discovered in 1976. Information Minister Lambert Mende says the new cases were discovered in a small town in the country's northern Equator province. Mende tells me that among the measures announced Sunday by the government is a total ban on bush meat hunting in the entire Equator province.
We have confirmed two cases out of eight samples sent to lab, and the minister declared that we are having these cases in the DRC and announced some measures to care for it.
So, Minister, what region of the country are these cases?
It is not something that is coming from West Africa. You know that we have six epidemia of Ebola since 1976. There is no link with the West African Ebola, but it is a hemorrhagic fever Ebola. So it is a case that came out of a small village inside the Equator province called Jera. Jera is located at 1,200 kilometers from capital city Kinshasa, and we have isolated completely Jera. We have set up a lab there and a center for treatment, and we created an international committee to help on working to find out and help those who caught the disease and stop the spreading if there is any possibility of spreading.
Minister, we spoke with you last week, and you had said your country has either shut its borders and that you have sent doctors to Liberia at the request of the Liberian president. Do you intend to recall your experts that you have sent to Liberia to assist with the Ebola crisis there?
We have already deployed the experts. We have not only Dr. Muyembi who went to Liberia. We have many experts here because we dealt with this disease six times since 2017. So we have medical personnel experienced with it.
Minister, I don't know what your government or what your health people are saying. When you talk to people, one of the causes of Ebola is they say that when you eat bush meat, you're likely to attract Ebola. Is that the feeling there? Because, you know, most people in Africa eat bush meat.
Yes, it is one of the way of catching this disease. That is why among the measures the Minister of Health announced this evening, we have banned hunting in the bush. All over the Equator province, they will not be hunting for all along the time we shall take to finish this problem.
Lambert Mende is Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Striking Nigerian doctors are expected to resume work today, Monday, following intervention by Senate President David Mark, who promised the doctors that the government will address their concerns. Dr. Lawan Musa, Leading member of the Nigerian Medical Association says over 1 million Nigerians petitioned the doctors to call off the over 2-month-old strike in response to the recent outbreak of the Ebola virus in some parts of the country. Musa tells reporter Peter Clotty that the striking doctors were part of the team established to control the Ebola outbreak.
After interventions from well-meaning Nigerians headed by the Senate president, there were a series of meetings that held, and the NNA has now ordered the doctors in Nigeria to resume work today, Monday. So that is the agreement. While we are hoping that all the promises made by government will be actualized.
Has this also got to do with the outbreak of Ebola currently in some parts of the country?
You know, prior to even this, this strike started well before Ebola outbreak. And immediately when Ebola outbreak came up, Nigerian Medical Association ordered all doctors in the states that were affected. Precisely, Lagos and Anambra were the first to be given the order that they should please go ahead and attend to issues pertaining to Ebola. And there were a lot of doctors that have been part of the control team of Ebola, despite the ongoing strike.
This was an agreement and petition, as you said, by some Nigerians and some officials. Were there any promises made to the NMA to resolve some of your concerns to end the strike for now?
Yes, there are some agreements and promises. And based on that and the caliber of people involved in the negotiations and the, all the encouragement on their own side, NMA decided to speed and agree to the promises.
How confident are you that the promises and assurances will be met? This was a question raised by some members, if I may put it that way.
Yes, unfortunately, it has been a trend where government will promise something and in a very short period, they renege on that. It has been a recurring problem, but intervention of the Senate president there, which is the promises to deliver. Association of Resident Doctors suspended their strike. And he was able to make the government see and convince them to address the issues they were addressed. Because of that, with that kind of understanding, I'm sure that is why Nigerian Medical Association also consider to suspend the strike based on the promises and intervention of the Senate President and other well-meaning Nigerians.
Dr. Lawan Musa is a leading member of Nigeria's Medical Association. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia has called for the setting up of a board of inquiry to look into last week's Ebola-related rioting and deadly shooting in West Point, a densely populated slum in the capital, Monrovia. Liberia's Information Minister Louise Brown said the board will have 10 days to submit its findings to the president. The government quarantined West Point last Wednesday as part of an effort to contain the deadly Ebola virus. Soldiers opened fire and used tear gas on residents as they attempted to stop the government from evacuating their commissioner from the township. At least 4 residents were wounded, and one of them, a 16-year-old boy, died from his wounds. Relatives said his death was the result of gunshot wounds. Information Minister Brown tells me President Sirleaf wants to know the facts.
Unfortunately, we've had reports of 3 injuries. One has died. And so Sheku Kamara body has been moved from the hospital where he died and deposited in the mortuary. The government is in touch with the family. We've expressed our deepest condolences, but the president has, in the meantime, ordered the defense ministry to set up a board of inquiry and within 10 days determine the facts and circumstances leading to the situation on Wednesday and report to her for further action.
We did speak to the defense minister last week in terms of what transpired in West Point. He said that the soldiers shot in the air and that those who got wounded as they tried to cross a security barricade made of barbed wire. I know there's an inquiry, but if you got wounded by barbed wire, do you die or somebody shot you?
Well, these are the reports that must be clarified. Of course, the orders of the president was to use the extent possible non-lethal force. That's why she has ordered an immediate setting up of a board of inquiry to within 10 days report on the facts and circumstances as to what happened on Wednesday.
So who's going to be a part of the board of inquiry? Because there are those who say that the defense ministry, the soldiers, are not going to be fair.
Usually in these boards, the military have internal mechanisms to deal with their own inquiry. They have their own sets of rules. They have specific orders. You know, they're governed by a uniform code of military justice. They have specific instructions as to engagement. And so the inquiry is going to be headed by the military and to be able to determine what actually happened, whether specific instructions as given were followed. What were the facts and circumstances that led to this unfortunate incident?
There are those who say, Mr. Minister, that West Point was a victim of the lack of coordination by the government. What do you make of the suggestion that the entire Ebola operation should be privatized?
Well, look, everyone has, they're entitled to their opinion. We certainly are a government who will respect all opinions, but it doesn't amount to truth. We have never hidden the fact that this is a difficult situation, and we have requested assistance from our international partners. Thankfully, they are responding to this serious emergency. And so those who have opinions other than what we're doing will welcome those opinions. But our duty continues to be to focus on this crisis. We'll do the Monday morning quarterbacking when the game is over. Hopefully, we should get this done sooner rather than later.
Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. It is Monday morning, August 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Libya's recently elected parliament has voted to label several Islamist militias involved in recent combat as terrorist groups. The parliament also dismissed the country's pro-Islamist defense minister for involvement in the conflict. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Libya's parliament has declared the Al-Qaeda-linked Ansar al-Sharia militia and the Libyan Dawn militia terrorist groups. Both militias have been involved in heavy fighting and clashes with forces loyal to former Army Chief of Staff General Khalifa Haftar. The parliament speaker insisted that the illegal militias are now legitimate targets of Libya's armed forces. He says parliament condemns the acts of war and terrorism of those Islamist militias attacking Tripoli and Benghazi and will work to quickly end the conflict. It is unclear if any of Libya's official armed forces are capable of fighting the militias. Army units under General Haftar have waged war on the militias in both Tripoli and Benghazi, but with mixed success. Islamist militiamen, mostly from the town of Misrata, chanted and fired automatic weapons into the air after seizing Tripoli's main airport from rival forces, mostly from the Zintan group. Photos on Twitter Sunday showed the facility ablaze. Several fuel depots and more than one dozen aircraft have been destroyed since fighting began in June. Several Islamist militiamen were killed Saturday when unidentified planes bombed their positions. In a statement read on Libyan TV, a spokesman for the Islamist Fajr militia said Egypt and the United Arab Emirates were responsible for recent attacks on militia positions and weapons depots. But Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi denied involvement in the Libyan conflict and insisted Egyptian warplanes have not left Egyptian airspace. Meanwhile, Islamist forces are attempting to sidestep Libya's new parliament by resuming deliberations of the old Libyan General National Congress, which they largely dominate. General National Congress official Omar Homaidan defended the Islamist militias and called on the old assembly to resume its meetings to, in his words, unite the country. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The South Sudan Army has dismissed media reports that the government has recruited 10,000 youth in the newly created Greater Pibor area in Jonglei State. Reports say the government asked former rebel leader David Yao Yao, who is now chief administrator of Pibor area, to mobilize the youth within his jurisdiction for the government army. Yao Yao denies he's recruiting the youth, but he tells VOA's South Sudan in Focus program that he has a military unit which will be integrated into the South Sudan Army.
Normally, when you talk of peace and you carry gun in your hand, people will not listen to you. You rather put gun down and you approach somebody peacefully. These are the friendly manners that we are going to apply so that at the end of the day, we are all in the same circle sharing our business interaction, social interaction. And then, of course, that will help us to move to the other corners, which are still inflaming.
Now, you were sworn in as the administrator for the Greater Pibor area earlier this month. When are you going to move to Pibor and start work?
We are supposed to move to Pibor as soon as possible. The only hesitation is a financial go-ahead, because up to now we have not yet proven any budget that will help us to start the initial priorities that we have already timetabled them. It is only the issue that makes us to wait, which I hope it will not take us more than 1 week to go down to Greater Pibor and start our formation of the government and make sure that all the priorities are going to be started.
There are unconfirmed reports that the chief of staff of the army in South Sudan had asked you to recruit 10,000 youth from your area to join the army. Is that correct?
Because we already have a military unit within the SSDA, Cobra Faction, and of course it will be integrated into our South Sudan National Army. The unit is already there. It is not a new recruit who is going to be recruited.
How would you describe the situation in Pibor right now when we talk in terms of development? Are there hospitals? Are there schools there? Are the roads okay?
All over, there is nothing that has been established, like maybe school, the health facilities, road, and the other developmental apparatus. So we have never experienced anything like that. So we are going to begin from square one.
That was former South Sudan rebel leader David Yao Yao. He was speaking from Pibor with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Uganda's oil sector is ramping up, and many have high hopes for its economic impact on the country. But some Ugandans are expressing concerns over the lack of governmental transparency and help for people affected by oil development projects. Elizabeth Pollard has more for VOA from Kampala.
The discovery of oil in Uganda in 2006 was followed by a largely positive response. Oil has been heralded as a chance for Uganda to build its economy and improve development sectors. Known reserves are estimated at 2 to 3.5 billion barrels. Government ministries and oil companies expect oil production to begin in 2018. But some groups have voiced concern about oil revenues in Uganda undermining residents. In Kabale Parish, in western Uganda, where a refinery is being built, the government has been evicting local villagers. The evictions have driven communities into national parks where they must compete with animals for natural resources. Although the government is supposed to compensate affected persons for their land, only half of the 7,000 villagers have received money, and most of them received only a portion of what they were owed. When Uganda's national budget for 2014-2015 was revealed in June, rights groups noted there was no provision for those waiting on compensation. Global Rights Legal Officer Belinda Kataramu explains the situation.
There's no allocation for them that people haven't been paid yet, people haven't been resettled. They have to build model villages, they have to build assets and walls and schools and hospitals, and but all that's lacking in the document. And yet, there's a provision for beginning the refinery project, which is next year. I think it's that lack of a balance that made the budget and whoever drafted it, that made it impractical.
Critics say Uganda lacks cohesive petroleum policy, with poor governance, a lack of transparency, and limited local access to oil resources. A 2012 survey found that 50% of Ugandans are not confident oil revenues will have any impact on their lives, but Ugandan lawmakers are readying a public finance bill to try to restore confidence. The bill will focus largely on the National Petroleum Fund and financing training programs created to employ welders and drivers. Kataramu says there's still skepticism of the public finance bill.
The independence of different bodies, URA, Bank of Uganda, because they'll be handling the oil money, their independence will be paramount, because now in the public finance bill, you don't see that. You see that all these independent institutions are dependent on the minister. And then also the vagueness of different clauses on procedure. It's very important that it's clear.
The Bank of Uganda has agreed to regularly publish figures on the Petroleum Investment Fund, while all withdrawals must be made public. But those like Kataramu say the lack of an independent oversight committee to manage the oil sector remains a problem. Total, Tullow Oil, the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Development, and the Petroleum Exploration and Production Department declined to be interviewed for this story. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics at the Youth Olympic Games in Nanjing, China. Kenyan Gilbert Kwemoi, Ethiopian Asefa Mulugeti, and Djibouti's Mohamed Ismail secured a 1-2-3 medal podium sweep in boys' 1500 meters. Ethiopian Kejeicha Atomsa, Burundi's Thierry Ndikumwenayo, and Kenyan Moses Koech ensured a 1-2-3 3000 meters medal podium sweep. Botswana's Baboloki Tebe clinched a silver medal in boys' 200 meters, while Egyptian Yosef Ahmed and Ethiopian Behanu Asgedom earned bronze medals in boys' hammer throw and girls' 3,000 meters respectively. Early on Saturday, Zambia's Sidney Simane won boys' 100 meters. Botswana's Sibanda Karabo bagged a silver medal in boys' 400 meters, while Ghana's Martha Bissa and Ethiopian Alemu Negari posted a 1-2 girls' 800 meters win. On Friday, Egyptian Mohamed Sosha won the bronze medal in boys' 85 kilogram weightlifting contest. Elsewhere, Kenyans David Rudisha, Asbel Kiprop, and Jairus Birech triumphed in 600 meters, 1 mile, and 3,000 meters steeplechase, respectively, at the IAAF Diamond League in Birmingham, Britain, on Sunday, while Kenyan Mercy Cherono triumphed in women's 2 miles. Turning to football, Nigeria's Falconets put up a brave fight before going down 1-0 to Germany in extra time at the FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup final in Montreal, Canada on Sunday. France edged North Korea 3-2 to place third. In Rwanda, a first-half strike by Alan Wanga lifted Sudan's El Merrekh to a 1-0 triumph over Rwanda's military side APR in the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championship final in Kigali on Sunday. Rwanda's Rayon Sports earned a bronze medal following a 4-2 post-match penalty shootout win over Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority. Meanwhile, in a Democratic Republic of Congo tie, AS Vita and TP Mazembe drew 0-0 as Tunisia's CS Sfaxien and Algeria's Entente Setif drew 1-1 in Orange Africa Champions League on Sunday. Sudan's El Hilal edged Egypt's Zamalek 2-1 as Tunisia's Esperance pipped Libya's El Ahli Benghazi 1-0. Elsewhere, Republic of Congo's AC Leopards thrashed Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosa 4-1 as Mali's Real de Bamako and Cameroon's Cotton Sports drew 1-0 in Orange African Confederations Cup on Sunday. Egypt's El Ahly and Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel drew 0-0 as Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports beat Zambia's Nkana 3-0. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owen in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Congo's health minister says 2 Ebola deaths have been confirmed in the Central African country. Felix Kabange Numbi said Sunday that samples from 2 of 8 people in his country tested positive for the virus. That's it for this Monday, August 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strayak, as well as post-editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you will have a very productive week.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
Wake, 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 wake. Umaru wake.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.